Hey, how's it going? I'm Andy Jones, and this is episode 153 of the Photography Side Hustle podcast. If you shoot sports and you missed last week's episode with Jack Beasley, you really should give it a listen. I'll put a link to his YouTube channel in the show notes, and like I say, he really is worth a listen. And he's got lots of videos on his channel showing you how to go about shooting sports and making money. He's not too far off getting a million views, so if we can all get over there and watch some videos, we'll get him past the million. Okay, this week's episode is a solo episode, and I want to go over some photography terms I think you should know. So the first one is aperture. Aperture is one of three settings you need to take correctly exposed photos. The other two are shutter speed and ISO, and I'll go over those in a little while. The aperture blades, which create the aperture, the hole that the light comes through, are located in the lens and restrict the amount of light that passes through the lens towards the sensor. The next term is f-stops or f-numbers, are measurements of light that pass through the lens. The lower the f-number, the wider the aperture opening is. Your camera allows you to choose apertures in 1/3 of a stop increments. These increments are in between the full stops. The full stops are 1, F1, 1.4, 2, 2.8, 4, 5.6, 8, 11, 16, 22 and 32, and it goes on a little bit further, but we won't get into those. Each step from the highest number down lets in twice the amount of light. So F4 lets in twice the amount of light than F5.6. The difference compounds when comparing multiple steps, like F5.6 to F1.4. Now, 1.4 allows in 16 times more light than F5.6. And remember that each step is multiplied by 2. So 4 steps are 2 times 2 equals 4. 4 times 2 equals 8, and 8 times 2 equals 16. So 16 times the amount of light. And that is why lenses with low maximum apertures, like the 50mm 1.8, can capture great photos in low light, because they can get lots of light in. They don't struggle. Where a kit lens at 55mm and f5.6 really struggles, because it's letting in such a small amount of light compared with these prime lenses. Now, the shutter speed and the ISO are also measured in stops of light. I've got a PDF file in the free downloads over at photographysidehustle.com that has an easy to understand graphic. It just makes it a lot easier. Next term, depth of field. Depth of field starts at the closest part of the image that is in focus and ends at the farthest in focus point. If you look at a portrait with a blurry background, the depth of field might only be a few inches. So it might be in focus just in front of the nose and finishes just behind the ear. So it might only be like 4 inches. That is a shallow depth of field. But if you look at a landscape photo where everything from, say, 5 feet in front of the camera to infinity, there might be some rocks in front of the camera and there are some mountains 5 miles away, and everything is in focus. And that is a deep depth of field. A depth of field can be controlled with the aperture setting by using a low number, a wide aperture setting. And it can also be controlled by the position of the subject between the camera and the background. Okay, next is shutter speed. Now, the shutter is positioned in front of the camera's image sensor, and it controls how much time the sensor gets to see the light that's coming in through the lens. A slow shutter speed, one with a low number, will allow more light to hit the sensor. Now, that is great for subjects that are still or slow moving. But if the subject is fast moving, the image will be out of focus and blurred. For fast moving subjects, you need a fast shutter speed to freeze the action. Next is ISO. ISO stands for International Standardization Organization. Well, it's actually International Organization for Standardization, but that was in French. So you've got to say it with a French accent, I guess. It was originally used for camera film. If you were shooting a portrait on a bright day with film, you would use ISO 100 film or ISO 64. For fast-moving sports and you were using film, you would have to get like an ISO 800 or faster film. Now, this standard was continued with digital cameras. Higher ISO numbers make the camera more sensitive to light with digital cameras. So when shooting in low light conditions, you can turn up the ISO to balance the light meter. The downside of high ISO numbers, though, is you get a little bit of grain in your image. In extreme high numbers, you'll get a lot of grain in your image. Anyway, next one, light meter. A light meter was originally a separate device. Well, it still is a separate device. It was used by photographers. They would push the button on it in a scene where they were about to take a photo and tells them how much light is available and what settings you should use. Now, film photographers still use these today, but digital photographers really don't have any need for them because there is a digital equivalent that is built into the camera body and it can be monitored either through the viewfinder as you're looking through or the rear LCD screen. Now, to get a properly exposed photo, you need to keep the little marker at the bottom of the meter in the center of the meter. So you change your settings until that little marker hits the center. And when it's at the center, you're going to get a properly exposed photo. Okay, next term, exposure triangle. Now, this is a combination of aperture, shutter speed, and ISO, which you use to get a correctly exposed photograph. Now, the triangle image was always confusing to me. I just look at it and think it's a waste. It's pointless. I learned a different way. I do have an exposure triangle PDF file that you can download at photographysidehustle.com. There's a graphic in there that shows the stops for aperture, shutter speed, and ISO, and it makes it so much easier to learn. Anyway, so yeah, you can download it for free if you want. Okay, next term, dynamic range. Now, this is the difference between the darkest and lightest tones and colors in an image. But it's not only that. It can be the dynamic range of a camera. And nowadays, with these newer models, they have a huge dynamic range compared with previous models that have gone by maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. Don't get too hung up on it. It's not the end of the world if you've got one with a slightly smaller dynamic range. You're not even going to notice it. Even the best cameras out there today can't match the dynamic range of a human eye. So don't even worry about it. Next one is focal length. Now, lenses come in different focal lengths, like a 24mm, 50mm, 85mm, 400, etc. Now, the amount of millimeters is the distance from the sensor to the front lens element. A 24mm lens has a wide field of view, and a 400mm lens has a narrow field of view, and a 400 can fill the frame with distant subjects. So there you go, focal lengths. Next one, overexposure and underexposure. Overexposure is where there's too much light in the image and it's too bright. Underexposure is where there isn't enough light and it's too dark. Next one, autofocus and manual focus. Now, autofocus is when the camera brings a subject into focus automatically. When using manual focus, the photographer has to turn the focus ring on the lens to bring the subject into focus. And it's very old school. It's where we used to be with a lot of film cameras. Well, with all the film cameras up to a point before it was invented. Now, most camera lenses have a switch on the side to change from autofocus to manual, whichever you want to shoot in. Very simple switch. It's just AF on one side, M on the other, and you just flick it across if you need it. I think Nikon's slightly different. They might have something on the body as well, but if you're a Nikon user, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, the next term, DSLR. DSLR stands for digital single lens reflex. A DSLR camera combines a traditional single lens reflex that was used for film photography. And basically, they just took the old single lens reflex and stuck digital sensors in to replace the film. When you look through the viewfinder of a DSLR, you're actually looking out through the lens, and that is done with mirrors. Now, a mirrorless camera, believe it or not, It's basically a DSLR without mirrors. Surprise. When you look through the viewfinder of a mirrorless camera body, you are actually seeing a video feed of what the lens is seeing, and it's relayed to you by the sensor. Next term is a hot shoe. And this is the mounting point on top of the camera for a flash or other electronic accessories. I think you can plug all sorts of things into them now. It used to be just for flash, but now you can put microphones and other stuff on there. Next term, prime lenses. Now, prime lenses have a fixed focal length, unlike a zoom lens, which is a variable length. They go from one length to another. Prime lenses also have a wide maximum aperture, such as 1.8, 1.4, or even 1.2. Now, if you're wondering why lenses are more expensive, prime lenses in particular, 1.8s are generally the cheapest. 1.4s cost maybe double, maybe not quite double, but the 1.2s might be, there might be $2,000 difference between the 1.2 and the f1.8 version of the same lens. Well, they're not really the same length, they're the same focal length. And that is because of the amount of technology that goes into them and the quality of the image that you get with them. So yeah, prime lenses. Not as many people shoot with prime lenses anymore. It used to be the purists used to shoot it, but it's not the same as it used to be. Now, the next term is something that you still see on a few websites, the dealers' websites, telephoto lenses. Now, nowadays we just think of primes and zooms, but telephoto lenses are used in long-range photography. So if you shoot birds or any wildlife or any time you need to fill the frame with a subject, you need to use a telephoto lens. So any long lens, so 200, 300, 400, 800, they get extremely expensive. And as an extreme example of how expensive a lens can be, Canon have a 1,200mm f8 lens, and that is priced at $20,000, $19,999. $20,000 for a lens. But if you are shooting lions, say, or a certain wild animal that's up in the mountains, some cougar or something, and you can't get close to it, 1,200mm lens is just what you need, so sure, National Geographic pay a lot of money, so $20,000 for a lens, though, is still it's a little bit extreme. All right, next term, wide-angle lenses. These lenses allow for a wider field of view. They're good for group photos, landscapes, architecture photos, anything where you're close to the subject and you need to get a big, wide field of view, get a lot of information in. The next term is zoom lenses. Zooms are popular with all photographers due to how flexible they are. They can cover a range of focal lengths such as 24 to 70, 70 to 200, 16 to 35, 100 to 400. The list goes on. There's more and more nowadays. And they allow the photographer to capture images without needing to change lenses. So if you're shooting primes and you need to go from 70mm to 200, you need to take your lens off, put the 200 on, or vice versa. Where with a zoom, you just zoom in. It's very easy. Next is aperture priority. Now, this is a camera setting like manual, usually abbreviated as A or AV for Canon, and it lets the photographer set a specific aperture or F number, and the camera will automatically choose the shutter speed to match. And if the shutter speed is too low, you just turn up your ISO until the shutter speed is where you want it. And very similar is the shutter priority. This setting on the camera is usually abbreviated as S or TV on Canon. I think TV stands for time value. So I don't know, must have been having a drink when they came up with that one. And it allows you to set the specific shutter speed, and the camera will automatically choose an aperture for you, which for 99.9% of photos that you take, you want to know what the depth of field is, so you want to set the aperture. So I think I tried using shutter priority once, and I didn't like it. I always used to go aperture priority or manual. Anyway, it's there if you need it. You probably won't. Next one is aspect ratio. Now, this is an image's ratio of width to height. Common aspect ratios for consumer cameras are 3:2 or 4:3. 4:3 is also known as full screen, and that's what most cameras are set to. If you are shooting video, you could use 16:9, which is also widescreen. And if you're shooting something like, you know, your images are only going to go on Instagram, you could just shoot 1:1 and get a square image. So really, most of this is done in post-processing. Some people do it in camera, but I wouldn't worry too much about that either. Okay, next term is stopping down. And stopping down refers to changing the aperture to a smaller opening or a higher f-number. You would stop down when you want to reduce the amount of light coming in or increase the depth of field. And you don't hear many people doing the opposite and saying, I'm stopping up. Don't think I've ever heard it. Everyone always mentions stopping down. And I just find that the term stopping down makes it sound like you're going to be having a wider aperture, but no, you're actually using a smaller aperture. So if you ever hear that, you know that they're just changing the aperture to a smaller opening. Next term is chromatic aberration. Now, it's also known as color fringing or purple fringing, or you get blue fringing on stuff. And it can be removed in Lightroom under the section lens corrections. You put in your lens and your camera body, which it normally knows from the metadata in the image what camera was used and what lens was used. So it can correct it automatically. You can just set it up to do it automatic. But aberrations can be used to great effect when you want a bokeh. And that is your next term, bokeh. B-O-K-E-H. Now, I always used to say bokeh, but that was because I was from Britain and we didn't know any different. And bokeh is a Japanese word for blur or haze, and it refers to the blurry, out-of-focus parts of an image. Now, depending on what lens you use, you're going to get a different bokeh effect. Next one is composition. Now, it doesn't matter what you shoot, you need to be able to compose the image. Now, there are many rules out there, such as rule of thirds, which divides the frame using two horizontal lines and two vertical lines. And then you put any points of interest, like someone's eyes or a dog's head or whatever, on a junction between these lines, or actually on the lines. Now, you can use leading lines also. Now, a leading line could be a fence or a stream going from the corner of the frame to the center of the frame. And what it does, it draws the viewer's eye into the image. It pulls them into the image. For group photos, think about positioning your subject so that, so say you've got three people, mother and two daughters, and you're going to do a portrait. Think about their head positions. What you want to do is you don't put them all in a straight line. Have their heads at different heights, close together, if you like. But what you've got to do is sort of draw a triangle between, make the shape of their heads. If you drew a line from one head to the next, you wouldn't create a triangle. And the same goes for arms and leg positions. For some reason, which is beyond me, we find that triangle shapes are more pleasing. So if you just use this simple trick, triangulate people when you're composing the image, and your images will look way better. Okay, next term is crop sensor. Now, a crop or an APS-C sensor is smaller than a full frame sensor. And a full frame sensor is the same size as the frame of a 35mm piece of film, which is 36x24mm. A crop sensor captures a smaller or cropped area than a full frame sensor, and it gives a tighter field of view. And because of this, lenses produce an image that looks more zoomed in when used with a crop APS-C camera body. So a 50mm lens on a crop sensor body will give a photo that looks like it was taken on a 70mm lens. Or if you shoot with Canon, it'll more like an 80mm lens. To determine what lens you need, you use a multiplier. For Sony, Nikon, Fujifilm, and Panasonic, if they're still around, the multiplier is 1.5. And for Canon, it is 1.6. An Olympus Micro Four Thirds sensor has a multiplier of 2. Now, my daughter started out with a 50mm lens on a Canon APS-C crop body. The lens gave her a field of view that was like an 80mm lens. And she had trouble shooting groups of people. So she got a 24mm lens that acted like a 38mm lens with a wider field of view, and she could get everybody in. If you've got a crop body, an APS-C sensor body, you times the lens by 1.6 if it's Canon, or 1.5. So an example is she got a 24mm lens and you times it by 1.6 and it creates images that look like they were taken with a 38.4mm lens. And on a Sony or a Nikon or a Fujifilm, that 24mm times 1.5 would have acted like a 36mm lens, which 35mm lenses are excellent for getting group pictures. Okay, next is image stabilization. Now, this reduces camera shake. It allows you to shoot with a slower shutter speed without getting any blur in your images. Initially, the stabilization, or with Nikon, I think they call it vibration control or something like that, it was built into the lenses. But now the bodies have it as well. So you can have it in both your lens and your body, and you'll get even more stability with it. So like I say, if you want to shoot slow shutter speeds or you struggle with camera shake, if you've got a lens or a body with stabilization, it'll really help you out. You won't get any shake at all. Okay, next term is post-production or post-processing. Now, this is just editing, as far as I'm concerned. Editing your images is 50% of what a photographer needs to do to produce a professional-looking photo. Whether you use Photoshop, Lightroom, or any other program, you need to develop your editing skills. Next is RAW files. RAW image files have not been compressed or altered in any way. This means that they contain all the data associated with an image. Once you've edited a RAW file, you export them as a JPEG or whatever type of file you want, but the majority of people export them as JPEGs, ready for printing, use online, or sending to a customer. Next is vignetting. Now, this is when a photo is darker around the corners and edges, and it can be caused by the lens. Poor quality lenses can cause vignetting. Or intentionally apply it during editing. When applied during editing, it gives you more emphasis to the subject. So if you darken the edges of an image, your subject is lighter and draws the viewer's eye in. Okay, those are some of the terms I think you need to know. I'm sure I'll think of a lot more once I stop recording this. I'm just about dying on my feet here with my allergies. I can't breathe properly. It's terrible. I can't tell you how many times I stopped because I lost count. So I'll be back next week with an interview, hopefully a very interesting one, if it goes off okay. So if you need help with anything, you can find me in the Facebook group. I'll put a link in the show notes and over at photographysidehustle.com/153. While you're there, feel free to support the show and buy me a coffee. Yeah, that's it. I'll be back next week with more waffle. Talk to you soon. Bye.